Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest edition of Planet Porky. I want to thank you all for all the responses and all the feedback we're getting for Planet Porky. The last set of podcasts were with young Jake, and there's been terrific to-ing and fro-ing on that. Thank you very much indeed. But today I'm delighted to welcome back into the studio for this podcast and another couple after this, the one and only Leslie Ann Jones. And Leslie Ann, first of all, welcome, but secondly, you have an amazing announcement to tell us about as a development of working on Planet Porky. Things are happening to you.
Do you think I should announce this on air? Is this the kind of thing I should bring?
Of course you should. Planet Porky is all things to all people for all bits of information. Okay, there are no rules and regulations, very, very few borderlines, but I want to hear what you've got to tell us.
Okay, question. Do I look desperate?
No.
Do I look as though I need to get married again?
Oh, definitely not. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Leslie, I'm when young ladies like you are still on the market, that's better than having you cooped up in some marital institution or marital status.
Well, I've managed to stay single since my divorce for almost 13 years. But
13? 1-3?
I've had a marriage proposal via email.
What?
From a chap, sounds like a rather lovely chap, actually, who has been listening to the podcast and is offering his hand in marriage.
You're joking.
I'm not.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Good God. First of all, how much money has he got?
I haven't asked that question. Is very mercenary,
Michael. No, it's not. First question.
So a person I've never even met, you've never even met somebody, and the first thing you'd say to them, much money do you have?
No. What I mean is you weigh up their lifestyle immediately. How many homes has he got? What sort of cars has he got? Where'd he go on holiday?
Is this where I went wrong the first time round?
Well, I don't know. Did you?
Yeah, probably.
Why? Did you get all the bum information?
No, I fell in love. I fell in love. Isn't that crass?
I'm not in love.
So don't forget it.
It's just a silly phase I'm going through.
You got that right.
Anyway, so what's your response then to this incredible marriage proposal? What do you know about your suitor?
Absolutely nada. But, you know, this is the way it's done in certain parts of the world, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Arranged marriages. I'm beginning to think there might be something in it.
Oh, I see. Well, listen, let me tell you this. And the reason I mentioned richness is that brings us on to one of the first surveys I was going to bring up this morning from my journals, okay? The journals of Mike Porky Parry. Wealthy people can expect to enjoy 8 or 9 years more good health than poorer folk.
Yeah, there's something in that. There's something in that. Look at the Queen, right? She's, 93? I was told quite a while ago.
Until she was 102, I think.
Well, no. But a girl I knew on Fleet Street, who used to be her private secretary, told me that the Queen has a massage every morning.
Really?
She also has access to the best doctors. I know her dermatologist, who is Neris Roberts.
Right.
Who kind of ran off with my husband, actually, but we won't go there.
My God.
She has access to all the finest physicians in the world, keeping her ticking over. Mm-hmm. It's little wonder that she's lived to 93.
Yeah.
Your average mom out there, without access to all of that, is not living so long. So there's something in that.
Well, it's funny you say that, because what my research shows is this. Researchers found they are less likely to develop a disability or long-term illness until an older age. The richest men at age 50 can expect to live at least 31 years. Now, that takes you to 81. Mm. No chance for me whatsoever.
Ah, come on.
No
chance. You don't know that.
No. The heart is battling to keep up.
No, it's
serious.
Not.
Oh, it is.
Some of my dearest friends are in their 80s, and they've got a lot of life in them.
And when you've got the combined problem of diabetes 2 and you're having to take tablets for the both, it starts to really screw up your body, believe me.
Yeah, but you're looking good today.
Well, you say that. I'm not looking for sympathy, folks, but believe me, I've done very well to get to early middle age. 15 years now since I had acute heart failure. Most people diagnosed with what I got, which was dilated cardiomyopathy, who don't have a new heart, don't make it more than the next 10 years. So I should have pegged it 6 years ago.
Anyone who had a heart.
Anyone who had a heart.
So should we get you a new heart then?
Well, I'm working on it. Don't worry. I'm working on it.
Because I'll do a sponsored run and swim and whatever else.
No. Only this week I put out a tweet, which is a story I saw in the Times and the Daily Mail. Robot heart within 8 years will be standard, okay?
Oh, I saw that.
Absolutely standard. And that means if I just keep myself going for the next 8 years, because I'm hoping to accumulate a lot of money in the next 8 years, I will buy a heart. I'll buy a new heart. How about that?
Well, where are you going to get one from?
I'll get one from the heart manufacturers, you know?
Oh, okay, a fake one.
No, not a fake one. It's a proper one. But I mean, like, if you go to America, you can buy a heart now anyway.
Yes, but have you ever thought about where those hearts are coming from?
No, but they're human hearts. I'm talking about mechanical hearts.
Okay.
I would just go to the mechanical heart factory, walk into the, the sales department, say, I want a heart, please, measure me up. They measure me up, I walk out with a heart, and then I fly to America and some surgeon puts it in for me.
Well, let's put your name down now.
Well, that's not a bad idea.
We need to get on the case, Mike, because, 8 years will go in a flash.
It will.
A heartbeat.
Yeah, in a heartbeat, I'm sorry. But it says here about the great unwashed, and, I always care and think about the great unwashed, because the vast majority of the world is the great unwashed.
But being so fragrant yourself.
Yeah, and it says here, for poorer groups, the wide-ranging study said the figures are 22 to 23 extra years for men, but only 24 to 25 for women. So, you're one up here if you've got a load of dough. Scientists tracked 25,000 Brits and Americans aged 50 and over for a decade from 2002, looked at their ability to do basic daily tasks such as washing, dressing and cooking, and without a shadow of a doubt, the more money you've got, the better you keep going. Dr. Paolo Zaninotto of University College London said improving quality and quantity of life could affect spending on public health and care needs and work participation for older ages. So basically, all the research in the world doesn't hide the fact that if you've got a lot of dough, you live longer.
Exactly.
And this is a very good thing. Now, I want to tell you about the funniest thing I've come across this week. And have I mentioned to you the great show Succession?
We haven't done that one. No, I haven't.
Right, Succession is all about a media dynasty family, okay? And it's largely based on the Murdoch dynasty, but a bit of the old Kennedy dynasty is brought into it. Terrible things happen to members of the family and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? It's all that kind of stuff. It's fantastic. And the lead figure, Logan Roy, is played by Brian Cox, the Scottish actor, who was, remember the Bourne films? He was the guy back at CIA in Virginia who was telling Pam she couldn't see all the files on the secret policy and all that. You know the guy I'm talking about?
I've got great gaps in my experience, haven't I?
Well, in the Bourne films, he appears as a rugged, pro-right-wing American CIA guy and ruthless and all that kind of stuff. In this one, Succession, it's absolutely brilliant because he's of Scottish heritage and Brian comes from Scotland anyway. We used to meet him up in Edinburgh. He was a pretty successful actor then, but he's more successful now with his Succession. He's head of the family. He's got three sons and a daughter all competing for the succession, when he dies and he has a stroke.
It sounds very familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It all kicks off. But as with an awful lot of people you and I've worked with in our industries, his favourite expression to anything that he doesn't agree with or he does agree with or he can't solve is, and I now apologise ahead of what I'm going to say next, because this is a family a friendly podcast, but this has to be said because it's part of the story. His favourite retort to almost everything is fuck off, right? So, some people like that, who's that big fat guy, Brian Blessed? Everywhere he goes, he claims people say to him, please could you shout, somebody's alive. What's his name? The guy, Flash Gordon. Gordon's alive! Now, Brian Blessed claims, I've never heard people shout this at him, but he claims that one time he was in the Antarctic and a Russian submarine surfaced, a few hundred feet away from them.
Apocryphal.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely
exactly.
Apocryphal.
And that some Russian commander lifted the lid, got out and said, "Hi-yo, Flash Gordon's tormentor."
As if.
Yeah, exactly. And he said, "Yes, I am." He said, "Please, for the benefit of my crew and the Soviet Republic, will you say Gordon's alive?" And he claims he goes around booming this out all over the place.
And if you believe that one, you believe anything.
Claims when he met the Prime Minister, right? And I didn't specify which Prime Minister, but he hinted it was Theresa May. You know, she allegedly asked him, oh, could you just say Gordon's alive? It's your favourite, you know, it's your most famous expression.
She would let herself down in that way, wouldn't she?
Exactly. But anyway, where it goes with Brian Cox is that because he's most famous for telling everybody, fuck off, everywhere he goes, people come up to him and say, oh, please, would you tell me to fuck off? And they want to record it on their phones.
No way. Like so, that old Frank Sinatra joke, isn't it?
So listen to this. So after playing a foul-mouthed mogul in the TV show Succession.
Foul-mouthed mogul?
Yeah, that's right. Is noticing a weird phenomenon. Fans now ask if he will tell them to fuck off. It's amazing.
Get
honestly.
Back up off the floor, Mike.
The blunt catchphrase of his character, Logan Roy. It happens at stage doors, on red carpets, and even at the launch of a book that he recently went to about sexual harassment, in which he was trying to help those who are sexually harassed. A couple of women were quietly saying, oh, Brian, could you just tell me to fuck off while I record it on my phone, please? he replied, is this the wholly appropriate thing to do at a Me Too event? He went to a Me Too event to support the women there, and they were all asking him to say, fuck off. Imagine if somebody had taken that the wrong way.
But it's a shame, isn't it, expletives have become devalued, I think.
Yeah,
there was a time when the F word...
Yeah.
Which I never heard as a child. My parents didn't use it.
No,
and it was considered something terribly shocking.
Yeah.
That now it's devalued to the point that people are going around saying it in the street, in church, wherever else.
Yes.
And see, what have we got left? There's kind of one vile word now, which shouldn't really be an expletive in the first place.
I totally agree with you because... as a kid, I never heard the word. I went to the King's School, Chester, and you know, there were a lot of children from very good families there. And I'd only heard about this mysterious expression, but until I was about 9 or 10, I thought it was fug up, honestly.
Fug up.
Yeah, fug up. And I once said to somebody, you ever say fug up to me, I'll smash your face in. Or something like that, because that's what I thought it was. And the other kid started laughing, you know.
Was Mohammed Al-Fayed used to say fugging this and fugging that?
Oh, he did, actually,
So Private Eye always used to write that.
The fugging bastard, Prince Philip, he killed my son, you know.
That's not funny.
That's not funny, but that's the way he used to talk about it.
But teaching one's children to swear usefully, I think, is a very good skill.
Yes.
And to retain it and to hold back and to use swear words appropriately.
I totally agree.
I think is a wonderful thing.
I totally agree. I never use swear words on my Twitter, right?
No, never.
If I ever do, it would have to be so exceptional, people would know it was exceptional.
Or
you know
if you were
I mean?
Quoting somebody or something.
Yeah, maybe or something like that. But I never do. I mean, I get trolled like you do, you know, get horrible trolling. In fact, I'm sure I've told you this. You know, on the night of the election, I put out what I considered a journalistic appraisal of the result. I thought, you know, and it says something like, crikey, what an amazing result for Boris Johnson. Everybody wrote him off and he's come back with a storming victory in the general election. Mind-blowing stuff. I didn't say I'd voted for the Tories. I didn't tell them who I'd voted for. I didn't even tell them if I had
just
voted.
Just expressing that you were impressed.
I
nothing wrong with that.
Expressing this fantastic story that's going to unfold in the next 72 hours about this amazing... Well, since then, I mean, the trolling I've had from Everton fans in Liverpool who have said, don't you ever darken the doors again, but not in polite language like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the F off, you... B, you see, you don't you ever come to this city again, you're not welcome, this is a Tory-free zone. It was horrendous.
Well, isn't this the problem with social media? Because suddenly everybody's a journalist, everybody has a voice, and everybody thinks that they can say whatever they like to whomever they like and get away with it.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
The floodgates are open.
And then when they've got a real point to make, of course, nobody takes any notice because they've expired their dictionary starting with F and ending with F, you know what I mean? And it's no good. Listen, talking about Antarctica, right? It segues into another story. When I did a podcast a couple of weeks ago, I think it was with young Jake, I hit out at some woman who was trying to... A young girl, actually, about 21, trying to get the record for overland trekking across Antarctica to the South Pole. You know what I mean? And I said, why? Yeah. What is the point of that in life? Why don't you get a decent job and do something or research, you know, trying to get rid of cancer.
Did anyone say that to Sir Edmund Hillary when he set off for Everest?
Well, Edmund Hillary can do that if he wants. That's up to him.
They say it's because it's there, don't they? Oh, why climb the mountain? Because it's there.
You know, a very clever answer, isn't it? You dickhead. I'm not saying that Sir Edmund Hillary's a dickhead, but I think most people are. Oh, look, I've got a picture of my false heart. I've just found it amongst my research records. Look at that, the robot heart, you see?
Yeah.
So I've just found that, by the way,
Let's save up. I mean, let's all do a sponsored walk and swim and climb. We could go and climb Everest to get you a new heart.
No, I don't think we will. Anyway, look, the reason I've told you this is because, of course, I've got another story out of my journals. This pathetic individual has decided to go swimming underneath the Arctic ice shelf. The guy's name is Lewis Pugh.
Wasn't it 8 minutes under the ice or something?
Yeah, and guess why he's doing it? He's doing it to point out that there's climate change in the world, OK? But again, I say to myself,
why don't
you do something more useful in life, you Burke?
Yeah.
Instead of going around, apparently, the water is very close to freezing. Obviously, it's not minus anything else. It would be frozen, wouldn't it? But, I mean, I just don't get it. Why don't people do something useful with their lives instead of messing around, swimming around, trying to tell everybody the world's going to end?
I take your point. We kind of know that anyway, but there was quite an interesting programme on a couple of nights ago with Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall.
Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall, what a great name.
Not doing food, which obviously he's a chef and he does food programmes normally, but it was a sort of health thing and about the benefits of cold water on the body.
Yes.
And he had to immerse himself either in a cold bath, a cold shower, or take a cold swim every day. And his
Is that what he does? His
heart rate improved.
Well, it will. Footballers do this all the time. They go into ice baths after training. What it is, right, and I know this for a fact because having diabetes, you get nerve ending problems. That's why people have their legs taken off, seriously.
Yeah.
What happens is the smaller nerves at the end of the big nerves start frizzing up and all of a sudden you've got what you might call a dead leg, but you've got no feeling in your toes and all this kind of stuff. Now, the way that you get over that is heat and cold. So very often I will take a hot water bottle to bed, but preceding that, I will soak my feet in cold water. And it's cold, hot that keeps the stimulation of the nerve ends going.
Okay.
And footballers do it all the time.
So maybe there's something in this guy swimming under the ice then.
Well, you know, no, maybe but he's, that's not, a he's use... not doing it for his own health.
No,
he's doing it as a protest.
Of course. But maybe there's something in this development that, you know, swimming under the ice might be a dimension to the health service.
Well, yeah, okay. What are we going to do? Ship people all the way up to Antarctica?
It's not a bad idea. Yeah. There's a lot of people we'd like to get rid of.
I wouldn't mind shipping a few people down to Antarctica.
Make a list.
Because obviously Antarctica's in the south. The way I can always remember the difference between the Arctic and the Antarctic is when I worked in America, I was sent to Manitoba, which is, you know, inside the Arctic Circle in Canada, because all the polar bears had invaded the town, literally invaded Manitoba, ripping
people's
arms off.
Looking for people to eat, yeah.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they came to eat people. They hide in, they're very sly polar bears.
They're massive.
They're massive creatures. They hide in alleyways because they go there for the bins for the food, and then they wait for a human being to come past, and then they could tear a human's arm off, and to them, that human's arm would be like you and me eating a spare rib in a Chinese restaurant.
But, a chicken leg.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, they put snow on their black nose, so you can't, they don't give themselves away.
It's like yetis. It's quite sinister, that whole thing.
But that's the way I remember it, is that the polar bears are in the north, in the Arctic, and in the south. Remember the Falklands invasion, all that?
Penguins.
Exactly. We were always frightened about wiping out the penguin colony and the Napoleon. The Napoleon or Emperor penguins?
Emperors.
Emperor penguins, yeah. They stand up like that.
Just magnificent creatures.
They are beautiful, aren't they? Yeah, I used to go and see them at Chester Zoo until I decided zoos are awful. And I'm never going to a zoo again. Right, OK, folks, you are listening to Planet Porky. I'm delighted you have chosen to tune in today. I have the absolutely very wonderful and newly proposed to Leslie Ann Jones in the studio today.
I haven't said yes yet.
Well, if you're thinking about it, there's still hope for the boy.
I might meet the guy. What do you think?
I would say that's a very bad idea.
Would you be jealous?
I would not be jealous, but he might be a stalker.
Oh, come on.
No, he might be a stalker.
You could humour me.
He might be a stalker. He might be a nutter. He might, you know, I don't know. He might take advantage of you.
Yeah,
so,
true.
Yeah, I'd be
I'm
very
fed up,
indeed.
Not hard up, Mike.
Yeah, well, exactly. Now, listen, talking about great professionals in our business, particularly of the female persuasion, do you have a view on the sacking or the scrapping of Victoria Derbyshire's programme on BBC.
Yeah, I do, actually. I mean...
Well, have you ever watched it, to start off?
I have watched it. I think she's competent. I think she garnered a huge following when she went through her breast cancer crisis.
Which I admire enormously.
And she wrote most eloquently about it, and that can only be good for the cause.
The was she budget... married to, what's his name, or Adrian Childs?
No.
Or was that somebody else?
No, someone else.
Okay.
I can't remember her name. Jane Garson?
Jane Garvey.
Yeah,
Jane
Garvey.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jane. But I think, I mean, the budget on Victoria's programme looked pretty high.
It did. And the numbers, 250,000.
Exactly.
So... I mean, you know, when I do a radio programme, I get 10 times that, you know what I mean?
It's a dodgy slot. Mm. I mean, are there really vast numbers of housewives, as we used to call them, sitting there on the sofa with a cup of tea, watching telly at that time of day?
What time does it come out?
It's nine-ish, isn't it?
9 a.m.
Yeah,
I
haven't seen it for a while. Because I'm generally working at that time of day.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I've lots of parts of the BBC are great, okay? And I think BBC Sounds is good. They put loads of good stuff out that competes with what you and I do. But some of the BBC is rubbish because it's such a vast organisation.
A lot of it's rubbish.
And the one programme I cannot stand, and I just cringe now when I see even in the schedules, is The One Show at 7 o'clock.
No, I hate that.
I mean, it is nothing
what
more
is
than
it for?
An advertising board for other BBC programmes, other BBC employees doing other things outside the BBC. It's amazing.
I don't like to swear, but it's piss poor, actually.
You think so?
Yeah,
yeah,
I do.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Why do you particularly dislike it?
The presenters seem wooden.
Yeah,
everybody
who
comes on there has something to sell.
Yes.
They're all flogging their product.
Yes, that's absolutely right. That's
I'm
exactly the same feeling I have.
Completely bored with that.
Exactly the same feeling as I have. Now, Leslie Ann, one of the reasons why you're such a star on this podcast is because you know the people that people always talk about in showbiz. So I want to ask you about your experiences, please, with Pamela Anderson, who has just announced she's getting married for the fifth time. And she's getting married, isn't she, to one of the most famous men in Hollywood, John Peters.
She's pneumatic, isn't she, as we say in South Wales. You know, you've got to hand it to her, really.
I think you have as well.
She goes on and on.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, married fifth time, a lot of them do that. They all get jealous of each other, don't they?
Jealous of what?
Well, they get jealous of each other. And this brings me on to the next great celebrity story, since you and I last see each other, and you must have an insight on this. Brad Pitt and who?
Jennifer Aniston.
Are they getting back together again? And will this change the world?
Well, it's not the first time they've been at the same awards ceremony.
Right.
They've not been husband and wife.
Have you interviewed either of them?
Yes, I have interviewed him, actually.
Brad Pitt.
No, it was way back. What was that movie where Gina thing and Susan Sarandon? No, they threw themselves off the side in the car.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, you know, they're in Vegas, in the desert.
Well, they went on the tour together, the two
of them.
They
were on the run. They started killing people.
Oh, no, I don't know. I haven't seen that.
Oh, you know the one.
Well,
classic old movie, yeah, but he was in that as a very young guy, actually.
Right, okay.
That was kind of his kickoff, I think.
Right, okay. And you interviewed him, did you?
Yeah,
where?
And Jennifer in Hollywood.
In Hollywood?
Yeah.
Well, Brad Pitt and you in Hollywood. Did he try it on with you?
No, he was a boy. He's
Weren't
a baby.
Upset? Weren't you upset?
No.
I mean, don't generally, you know, certainly, you know, during the course of your career, have you not had, you know, the hand on the knee treatment from a superstar or two?
There was a time. They wouldn't dare now.
Why?
Because I'd punch him.
And you're a grown-up lady, so to speak, okay?
In those days, and I think this is a common theme, I've had this conversation with so many women, we didn't know that we could say no. And that we could slap them away when men strayed over the boundary.
Yes.
And nowadays, we're aware. I have two daughters.
Yes.
I have a son as well.
Yes.
I've taught them all. Actually, you know, you have boundaries, you have space.
Yeah.
And you do not have to say yes to anybody.
Yeah. But what about if you actually found the person you were interviewing attractive?
Yeah, well, that's different.
Yeah, well, I mean, has that happened?
Yeah, of course.
That has happened?
Oh, yeah, of course.
With famous
people? Hasn't it
happened
to you?
With famous people?
Well, I'm not saying I shagged them, but there have been flirtations.
What are we saying?
There have been flirtations.
Flirtations?
Yeah. Mutual attraction,
Is that as far as flirtations? Yeah. Are we going to name names here,
that's
please,
a euphemism,
Leslie,
isn't it?
Come on, name names.
No, I'm not going to name names. You're going to pay me for that.
Sorry?
We have to do an X-rated podcast
for
that.
Maybe it'll appear in one of your books one day. I used to work with a female lady, you know, in Fleet
Street.
Female lady, yeah, that's right, yeah. Well, you never know these days. And I worked several places, inflation, all that. And she is absolutely adamant that Simon Cowell fell for it in a big way. Nothing sleazy about it. You know, it wasn't like he, you know, had a casting couch and all that. But actually fell for her and wanted to start dating her and wanted to, you know, see if she would spend more time in America and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, if Mr. Cowell's listening, because this is a very, very popular podcast, of course I'm not naming names, Mr. Cowell, because I'm sure that, you know, you have had hundreds, if not thousands, of ladies in their time who've sort of hit on you, who may have misunderstood your actions. But anyway, all I'm saying is,
I don't think
he
ladies.
Was a single man at the time. He was that's a bit harsh. he was a single man at the time, and you know, nothing ever came of it. But you see, you can go the other way around. What about a male journo, a male interviewer interviewing some beautiful lady?
Yeah, happens a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah. I shared a house with Raquel Welch. This is not made up.
Shared a house with Raquel Welch?
In Los Angeles. When I first got to LA, I went to live in her house for a while because her manager was a friend of mine.
Yes.
And I, you know, landed at the Sunset Marquee, stayed there for about, I don't know, a month or something. And, and then I had to look for somewhere to live.
Right.
And my friend Hal said, oh, you know, Raquel is looking for a housemate.
What was going on in Hollywood at the time?
I was just there working for You magazine, actually.
I see. Yeah, okay. Yes. So it wasn't like a film festival or something.
No. I was based there for a few years. And I did move in with Raquel for about 6 months. And she was always coming on to journalists.
I mean, how old was she then? 50s?
Yeah, she's probably a good 20 years older than me, I would say.
Exactly.
So on the verge of 50s, I would say.
Yeah, but was she still stunningly attractive?
Amazingly so.
Yes, that's
right.
But
terribly insecure.
Really?
And I think my role was to boost her confidence and to tell her how beautiful she was every day. She called me Baby. That was my nickname. And I had to call her Rocky. And we would talk in the third person,
Not Racky, but Rocky.
Rocky. So she would refer to herself in the third person and she would say, oh, Rocky's not feeling so good today. And,
I see.
Hey, Baby, come on, tell Rocky she looks good.
It's amazing. Did your friends know that you were living with Raquel Welch?
Oh, yeah.
What about when you came back to England and you're in a Fleet Street pub and you just happened to mention to a group of male colleagues, you know, by the way, I'm living with Raquel Welch. Wouldn't they have been on the first plane back with you?
I wrote about it. I mean, we were that close. We had birthdays close together.
Yeah.
We were best friends for a while.
When Leslie Ann says that close, folks, for the benefit of those who cannot see what's in the studio,
because it's
she
a podcast.
Is crossing her fingers like this. We were that close.
We used to go for manicures and pedicures. We used to go to the Beverly Hills Hotel
and hang have cocktails.
Out, go out for dinner with her friend, Nancy Sinatra.
Yeah.
You know, these
Nancy.
Women were richer
those
than
those boots were made for walking. That's what I'm going to do. Because one of these days, these boots are going to walk all over
you. You always get carried away,
don't you? That was the only song she ever made, apart from, didn't she make the theme tune to one of the Bonds?
She did a duet with her dad, didn't she?
Oh, yeah.
Something stupid.
And then I go and ruin it all by saying something stupid like I love you. Which I thought was quite inappropriate for a father and daughter to sing together, didn't you?
Yes.
Because it's a romantic song, you know.
Something sleazy about that.
No, but Nancy Sinatra also did the theme tune for a Bond film, and I can't remember which one it was, but I'm sure somebody listening to this podcast right now will be screaming into their phone saying, it was, you know, From Russia With Love or something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember. Russia Before I was born, probably.
Love.
But
anyway.
The thing about those two birds, they had facelifts.
Oh,
at a time when people
did
weren't
Raquel
really having...
Did Raquel have a boob job?
Don't know. She was always showing me her tits.
Oh, really?
I didn't particularly want to see them.
Oh,
but
blimey, how many men in the world would have swapped places with you on the morning she said, Leslie Ann, will you just examine my bosom for me, please?
My breasts. And, you know, she said that she didn't get much work in film doing love scenes, nude work.
Yeah.
And she'd say, Latin nipples, baby, wanna look? And then she would pull the top up and pull the bra down. And she also had gigantic photographs of herself on the walls all over this house.
Right, okay.
And she was always pulling her clothes oft to compare bits of herself up against
with
the pictures,
you
see.
Which were taken, of course, a year or two earlier.
My mum was so worried about me at that
time. And what about, you know, boyfriends she brought home?
Well, this is the point. This brings us back to where we started, which is that she would do these rounds of interviews promoting non-existent films. She was pretty much a pariah in Hollywood by this time.
Yes.
Because she was impossible to work with.
But why did she become a pariah? Because of her demands on set and all that kind of stuff.
She would flounce off and she would ask for the money to be doubled and all this kind of thing. And
didn't
Deborah Winger replace her famously in Bird on a Wire or something?
Oh, I don't know.
Long time ago. But she would arrange these kind of press conferences to promote nothing at all.
Right.
So that she could pull the young journalists.
Really?
Yeah.
But then should she bring them home?
Yeah.
To your house?
Yeah. Her house?
To her house?
Yeah.
So you would sometimes shuffle into the kitchen of a morning and there's a bloke there in a dressing gown.
I was always in fear that it might be somebody I knew from here.
Yes, exactly. Yes, some English journalist had flown over to interview.
But I managed never to see you of a morning, didn't I?
No, absolutely. Yeah, you said you never saw me there. That's true. Well, amazing that. And the other amazing thing about Raquel Welch, apart from the fact I think she was one of the most beautiful women of all time.
Stunning.
Stunning. Amazingly, her son married Freddie Truman's daughter.
Yes.
Now, you simply couldn't get a greater contrast in lifestyles between Freddie Truman, professional Yorkshireman, put dinner in the oven, get pint down pub, you know, get ferrets down trousers and all that. You couldn't contrast
cultural
that with
cultural appropriation or what?
Exactly, with, you know, one of the most beautiful Hollywood stars of the day and age.
But do you remember the wedding? Well, she rocked up in white.
I was about to say, she completely outshone her own her own son, didn't she? No, was it her daughter or her son?
I can't remember.
It was her daughter. No, it's her daughter. It was Freddie Truman's son.
Whichever way round it was.
Married her daughter.
But Raquel Welch
she did,
rocked
she
up in white.
Her daughter at her own wedding.
What a thing to do. Nobody
as
said.
As I remember it, she had like cross straps across her breasts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
this is what I'm saying.
And part them and all that kind of stuff.
Lift and separate. Wasn't that the Playtex ad from way back?
Yeah.
I mean, whoever would say that now?
Yes.
It's all about crunching them together isn't it?
Well, that's so you can't see the fact that they've been planted on your chest in two different places, about a foot apart.
Latin nipples, baby.
That's right, yeah. But that was that was an amazing unison, but you say it didn't last very long.
No. Mm? And I forget what happened, but it's not a match made in heaven, is it, Yorkshire and Hollywood?
No, not really. Now, listen, talk about Yorkshire, right? I met a most amazing woman. This week. So I did tell you earlier this week, you know, I did Jeremy Vine on Five. It's a great show, love doing it, and it's always lots of fun, and they make it light and bright and all that. And the star guest was a lady called the Yorkshire Shepherdess, right? And this amazing woman turns up. Her name's Amanda. I'm trying to remember her surname now, but I'm not being rude, but I will get hold of my phone, which is somewhere here, because we've exchanged messages since then. Okay, so here it is. Here, yeah. So I'll find her name. I'm not being rude, but you work with lots of people. And what happened was, I got into the green room as you do, and this lady walked in, and what a stunning looking woman she was. She's very tall, right? Yeah, I'm going to find out exactly.
She didn't look like a sheep.
She certainly didn't look like a sheep. And as soon as I found out, here we go.
Was she a woolly
jumper? Her name was Amanda Owen, okay? And she's known as the Yorkshire Shepherdess, right? And you think yourself, you're going to see somebody like... Do you watch Heartbeat? Or did you watch Heartbeat?
No.
No? Well, in Heartbeat, there's a woman called Peg. And, you know, she's the local villainess. She goes around in a Mac and a beanie hat. She drives an old truck and she's all got wellies on and always covered in mud and all that.
Oh, you were expecting that, right?
I was expecting that, you see. Anyway, this woman comes in. She's about 6'3" tall. Stunning figure. Really stunning figure. She's got a shortish skirt on, you know, with boots and all that. She had a crook with her shepherd's crook, which she'd made herself from the claw of a goat's foot and all this kind of stuff. I'm not joking. Amazing woman. And she had beautiful hair. I mean, she was in makeup for about an hour. I'm not joking, you know, and they did her up beautifully and all that kind of stuff. And the only way you could tell that this... Oh, by the way, she has 9 children. She has 9 children, and she lives on a farm that is so remote, she's actually given birth to five of them herself.
Because, well, we tend to do it ourselves.
No,
as opposed to get somebody else to do it.
Before an ambulance arrived.
Oh, okay.
You know, on her own farm. She's given birth to children on the roadside, trying to get to the hospital. The farm is so remote. It's one of the highest farms in England, you know, in the Yorkshire Dales and all that kind of stuff. And she's never made it to the hospital on time. She's now well-versed in delivering children herself.
Surely she knows by now how not to get pregnant.
Well, presumably she likes a big family, you know, and her husband's a working farmer like she is. And this
well, you know what they say.
She doesn't just, well, no, I don't know what
about
they say.
About farming people.
No. And I'm not having anything like that said about my good friend Amanda. But the point is, not only is she getting up through the night to look after her children, one of whom, the youngest one who's now two, she gets up in the middle of the night and goes out at 3 o'clock in the morning in -5 temperatures to rescue a ewe that's delivered a baby, you know, or a sheep that's delivered a ewe or something like that. You know what I mean?
The ewe delivers the lamb. Technically, the ewe is delivered of the lamb.
Oh, I see, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she takes a crook out, she rescues them, and then she brings them in, -5, 2, 3 feet of snow. But an amazing woman. And the only way I could tell that she wasn't a model, literally, you know, because she looked just as good as a model. I mean, I can't imagine the figure on the woman with 9 children, you know, having been born. Her hands were the hands of somebody who works on a farm. Mm-hmm. Do you understand what I mean?
Hands that do dishes.
Not hands that do dishes. Hands that you can see have, you know, yielded or wielded a spade or a post or been carrying lambs around or... It's an amazing woman, an amazing lifestyle. She's made books about it. She makes TV series about her. I wish her all the luck in the world. Well, Leslie Ann, very nice to have had you with me in the studio today. We got to a load of stuff that people are very interested in. A wedding proposal to you, living with Raquel Welch. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, baby. So stick with me. I might even be buying you a cocktail after we finish today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Leslie Ann, remind people how they can get hold of you if they want to.
On Twitter, it's at LAJ Writer.
Yes, that's right. And I'm at Mike Parry 8. Folks, thanks very much indeed. Let us know exactly what you think about our podcasts. It's, what is it again? It's planetporkypod at gmail.com. Okay, folks, back with you soon. When I did a podcast a couple of weeks ago, I think it was with young Jake, I hit out at some woman who was a young girl actually, about 21, trying to get the record for overland trekking across Antarctica to the South Pole, you know what I mean? And I said, why? Yeah. What is the point of that in life? Why don't you get a decent job and do something or research, you know, trying to get rid of cancer instead
Did anyone say that to Sir Edmund Hillary when he set off for Everest?
Well, Edmund Hillary can do that if he wants. That's up to him.
But they say it's because it's there, don't they? Oh, why climb the mountain? Because it's there.
You know, a very clever answer, isn't it? You know, you dickhead. I'm not saying that Sir Edmund Hillary's a dickhead, but I think most people are. Anyway.
The thing about those two birds, they had facelifts.
Oh,
at a time when people
did
weren't
Raquel
really
have
having
a boob job?
Dunno. She was always showing me her tits.
Oh, really?
I didn't particularly want to see them.
Oh,
but
blimey, how many men in the world would have swapped places with you on the morning? She said, Leslie Ann, will you just examine my bosom for me, please?
My breasts. And you know, she said that she didn't get much work in film doing love scenes, nude work.
Yeah.
And she'd say, Latin nipples, baby, wanna look?
Oh, please, would you tell me to fuck off?